This program is part of the Infinite Potato Alliance. Visit us at infinitepotato.com.
I'm Jared Stern. I think people should listen because we're desperate for attention right now.
I'm also Jared Stern.
This is what I like to call an exercise in benign narcissism.
And you're between two Sterns. Guys, do we not have a ton to talk about this week? We got some Jared Western announcements coming your way. The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air proves that you're never too old to get street cred. And I'm sure Jared has an update about his comedy career. Oh, and I have a really good joke about baseball.
Wow. That's quite a tease.
Right? Well, I'm on senioritis for my job. So now I just sit there at my desk, stare at the wall, and I'm like, well, let's think of a fun intro for the podcast.
I have to say I'm proud of you.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you why I'm proud of you.
Hmm.
I was going to come on here and I was fully prepared to ask you what happened over the weekend. And you going, what happened?
Well, oh, no,
I don't look at Twitter. I don't watch TV. I don't care about the Oscars. I will admit
I didn't see it live, but I sure as shit watched it in, you know, eighth frame slow motion over the, when I first saw it, I thought it was a stage slap. Chris Rock had his hands behind his back and leaned into this fucking thing. Will Smith napped his shoulder like he was doing a slap. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible.
But then you get to see the still frames of it and you're like, oh yeah, he hit it.
Oh, he slapped the shit out of him. And by the way, everybody is giving Chris Rock a ton of credit for keeping his shit together in that moment, which I will as well. But if you've ever done stand-up comedy for longer than 5 minutes, you have pissed somebody off in the audience who has attempted to walk up on stage on you.
I've had someone walk up on stage.
Me too.
With me. I believe maybe 10 episodes ago, I talked about that Russian woman.
Yes.
Who got offended when I talked about vodka.
Yeah.
And I mean, she wasn't, there was no malice, but she had no problems just meandering up on stage and occupying my space and telling me just what I was doing wrong.
I don't take any chances. If I see somebody is walking up on stage, I immediately hit myself. And not an open-handed slap. I mean a close-fisted, I'm trying to draw blood. I broke my nose and caused a deviated septum one time just because I had a joke that fell flat. You got to take yourself out. Otherwise, the other person's going to do far worse. I stand by this logic.
Okay. Interesting. So here's my only, and first of all, attention hacks. We've heard it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a couple days now. By the time this podcast comes out, we'll have been even more. We've heard the pursuit of slappiness.
So this is where I fall short because I haven't heard any of these. So bring them my way. I like Pursuit of Slappiness. That pursuit is amazing.
There's the Pursuit of Slappiness. Are you aware of the Batman and Robin meme?
No.
Where it's Batman slapping Robin.
Oh, in the comic. The comic image, yeah.
That's been transposed.
Okay.
What else? Oh, yeah. He got in one little fight and his mom got scared. Yes, we fucking know. Okay.
I did hear that. Does Will now need to move with his auntie and uncle in Bel-Air?
In Bel-Air, yes.
I don't know if it's hack. The one I came up with is, can we finally get rid of the very sexist comment that has bothered me for years and just all start calling it a Chris slap instead of a bitch slap? Because I find bitch to be derogatory towards women and I'd like to call it a Chris slap now.
Okay. I mean, I haven't heard that yet.
Oh, that's because it's not funny.
There's your out, everybody.
The out occurred very early on in this episode.
Very early.
No, I've talked a lot about this, and here's what I'm going to say. There is a reason, like, I interact with the audience a lot in my stand-up comedy. I really do. And I learned this lesson very early on. You've got to stop attacking your audience. Like, yes, there is a certain element of roasting that occurs within the Oscars. However, I did not know the backstory for Jada Pinkett Smith. But after watching some of the shit that I have seen, the videos of her breaking down crying and expressing the shame and humiliation that comes with this disease and this condition, In what universe is she the victim of a joke? And to be fair, I love the movie G.I. Jane. My fundamental point is the juice wasn't worth the squeeze. I don't think the joke was funny enough to have said in the first place.
It was
and
lazy.
That's my frustration. It was lazy humor.
It was lazy and dumb, and the reference is 25 years old.
And Timothy it's not the same reference. She shaved her head to be a Navy SEAL, not because she was losing her fucking hair. It's a medical condition. I mean,
right, but that's what I mean. Obviously, he wasn't conflating those two, but like the reference was 25 years old. Timothy Chalamet had to nudge somebody and go, "What the fuck is G.I. Jane?"
Right.
Like, if your reference isn't from this century,
yeah.
Maybe don't use it.
I did not understand the need for it. And ultimately, you know, outside of all the other problems, the joke wasn't funny.
The joke wasn't worth getting the shit slapped out of you for.
Agreed.
It really wasn't.
Now.
And to hear him defend it while Will Smith was yelling at him, he goes, hey, come on. It's a G.I. Jane joke. Could he hear himself? Yes, it's a G.I. Jane joke. It ain't fucking worth it.
You know what flashed back to me in its own way? And obviously one of these is more extreme and worse than the other. Sure. It reminded me of the Michael Richards on stage at the Laugh Factory.
Oh, it's nothing like
that. No. But here's the thing. Here's why it reminded me of it. Because he dropped the N-bomb a couple of times, and then the audience turned on him and started booing him. And then he attempted to defend himself and be like, what? They are, and then kept going. And I was like, why are you defending? You've lost the room. What, are you going to negotiate them back? Zero comedians in the history of comedy have ever lost a room and then logicked their way back and been like, guys, if you look at the fundamental structure of my joke, it was actually not that. It never happens.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up and move on.
Move on. And you know what? Good on him. The man's a professional.
Mm-hmm.
He gathered himself even after the verbal interaction and was able to calmly move on and give the award for best documentary.
That guy got slapped so hard. It was like the last 5 seconds never happened. If you look at Chris Rock right before he got hit and right after he got hit and you cut the feed out there, nobody would believe he got hit. That man rolled with that punch or a hit like I've never seen anybody in my entire life.
I would like to thank the Australian and Japanese viewing audience for giving us the uncensored version.
Putting it up online, getting it immediately before the feed even hit the West Coast.
I mean, right. Because the sound goes dead, first of all.
Yeah.
They cut the sound completely. So you couldn't hear what either of them were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they had to bleep it because, yeah. That obviously makes sense, but holy crap. And then they let him accept his award. I mean, sure, but the Oscars are the most talked about thing the Oscars have never been this talked about.
No, never.
And it has nothing to do. Well, no, that's not true. I guess the last time it was this talked about was when they fucked up. What happened?
Do you hear this dog next to me?
Oh, that was a dog?
My roommate's dog. So because obviously I've been selling my furniture because I'm moving across, I don't have a desk right now. So I'm at the little table in the kitchen and Walter is losing his goddamn mind. But the problem is he's got a cone around his head. So he's like a 90-pound golden retriever who's 15 years old. So he's got that old man strength. He's just smashing this cone against the table. Yes, sir.
Well, the other thing is the cone acts like an amplifier.
Yeah. So let's tie this off, and then I'll explain to you why it's like Dr. Doolittle over here.
Okay. So the last time the Oscars had this kind of relevancy was when they fucked up and named the wrong winner for Best Picture.
Oh, I don't remember this. What happened?
This is when La La Land was announced as the winner, but they weren't the winner. I think Moonlight was the name of the movie that won.
What? I've never heard about this. Because I don't pay attention to things. I don't think the Oscars or any of that stuff makes any sense, to be quite honest. Here's the thing about these types of shows. I do not believe in the winner-loser type of competition scenario. I just don't. I think everything in the Oscars is too subjective. Rate everything on a scale. If you get an above a certain point, then you get an award for doing a good thing. Why do we have six people who all absolutely killed their fucking role fighting to be the best one? The best in whose opinion? Like, you and I have the exact same name and have 100 things in common with each other. You could lay 3, 5, 6 chocolate bars in front of us. Mm-hmm. What are the chances of us picking the exact same two? And then at that point, what are the chances of other Jareds? Like, opinions are subjective. There are basic rules of good and bad, right? The Room, the movie The Room, is objectively understood as being a bad movie based off of a number of different criteria.
Sure.
But why are we only half awarding these people? Like, if you're getting the nomination for the award, then you might as well have gotten the award, in my opinion. And I stand by this philosophy. I really do. It's like, any type of competition like this drives me insane. But this is a topic for an entirely different podcast where I
would. Sure. Well, I'm actually much more interested in you putting 6 chocolate bars in front of us and us picking the best one.
Did we finally find the hook for this show to get people to start just us eating chocolate bars?
Hey, sure.
Look, to tie off the whole Oscar thing, what I was disappointed by was, and I was talking to my dad about this on the ride home today. I am not upset that Will Smith or Jada Pinkett Smith had a visceral and physical reaction to this. It was an embarrassment. It was a shame. And I don't suffer from alopecia. I don't know what it's like to lose my hair and then be judged by a community or a people because of that. So my opinion.
You, I think you have some insight.
Okay. I am losing my hair a little bit. That's fair.
No. Just into the alopecia in general, because you know what it's like to live without eyebrows.
An alopecia light.
Right, sure. You have mild alopecia.
What I wish it had happened was this. This was, if I could rewrite what occurred, this is what I wish would have happened. Everything played out exactly the same. And Will Smith gets up. And Will Smith walks up to the stage. And he can stand there and stare down Chris Rock for an uncomfortable couple of seconds. And then shake his head and sit back down.
Right.
And sure. Then when he gets up to do his Oscar speech, do the greatest thing that you can possibly do to a bully, which is shame them in the public eye. Because his response could have been perfect. Why are we a society that feels like it's okay to insult and condemn this woman with a medical condition that she's had the bravery to come out and speak openly and honestly about? Is that what you think is funny? Putting down other people, shaming other people for who they are? That's what you think? He could have had the great, and he could have tied it in. He's like, I just won an Oscar for a movie about a father who defends their daughters and teach them how to be a good, honest person. And unfortunately, in the same night that I should be happy to win my first Oscar, the only thing I will ever think about is the disrespect Chris Rock showed to my wife. And for any apology that he issues after this, please understand that he not only said the joke, but defended the joke in the moment. So any apology that issued after this is simply for him to save face in the public eye. That would have resonated so much harder than any slap that he could have done. And as somebody who has been bullied a fuckload in my life, I have been bullied so much in my youth. And I'm proud to say that I've never gotten into one fist fight. I have learned how to like Eminem, White Rabbit, shame the people around me. I distinctly remember being in high school and people making fun of me and me being like, is that the best you've got? You're making fun of me because you think I might be gay. I got acne all over my face. My hair is terrible. I dress fucking horribly. And that's all you've got? You're not even good at insulting me. That's how you respond to bullies. But yeah. It actually triggered me a little bit. It brought me a little flashback to high school.
I'm just happy that you're aware of it. I am just happy you're aware of it.
Because I'm in the loop?
Yeah, that you're in the loop at all, because I wasn't sure.
Oh, yeah, I get that. Given my track record, your instincts were on point.
this has been like pretty all-engaging, all-encompassing throughout the news cycle. Like, that's all social media.
It's all been. It is right now. Yeah.
That's all TV has been. Anything. That's all anybody's talking about. But as the news cycle goes, you know, more shit's going to happen and we'll forget about this and whatever. But
I don't think we're going to forget about this any times. I think that this is going to stay for a minute. Anyway, give me 1 second. And then I'm going to explain why you're hearing all this noise on the podcast. Everybody, give me 2 seconds.
Sure.
Dude, get the fuck away from me. Chloe, you're the best. You're an angel. You can do nothing wrong. All right. So as many of you may remember, obviously I went through a breakup the latter part of last year. I think I talked about it in January, but Julie and I actually broke up in like October, November, but we were living together. So we didn't want to make a big weird deal out of it. So we cohabitated. We slept in different rooms. Still a very good friend of mine. She's a great person. Anyway, we had two cats, Chloe and Tishan. Tishan made it clear that he hated me and did not want to live with me by shitting all over the floor.
Right.
Julie is out of town, has been out of town for like 2 weeks. She went on like an aerial retreat. And then her new boyfriend was flying out to Texas to meet up with her. And there was nobody to watch Tishan.
Oh, so, no, you have that cat?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So she asked me very nicely if I could watch Tishan for her. And again, there's no bad blood there. So I brought Tishan up and everybody's freaking out. Now, if you recall, Tishan was very aggressive. He would shit all over the place. And Chloe, my angel, my daughter, the essence of my life, was always so timid and intimidated by him. And I brought him in early. I've been telling her all week. I was like, listen, kid, Tishan's coming back for a couple of days, not staying with us permanently. Don't you worry. And I could not have been prouder of this interaction. So I bring Tishan in, I put the carrier on the ground, I open it up, he looks around, he's like, I remember this place. This has got a lot of places where I can shit on. This is pretty good. And Chloe looks at him and looks at me with this look of like, what the fuck is going on? And I'm like, hey, I told you that this was going to happen. And so he's over there a little concerned and nervous. She jumps down off the table, goes right up to him, nose to nose and sniffs him. And as he goes in a little bit more, she raises her paw and hisses right in his face. And wow. He scurries away. I'm like, that's my girl. That's my
wow.
girl. But I want to make it clear. She didn't slap him. She just raised the hand. Just raised the hand. She didn't follow through. And that's how I raised that girl.
That's right. Man, it thematically, this podcast is just.
And so Walter, my roommate's dog, is just losing his mind because now there are two cats and Tishan can be a bit. So it's Animal House back here. The literal one, not the actual one.
Right, sure.
I do have one other kind of big announcement that I can finally talk about a little bit.
Go for it. Why not?
So I have figured out a location that I am moving to the East Coast for. As many of you know, what's been going on with my job is they were doing a little shakeup with my department and they were going to move me from doing what I was doing to selling taxes. And while that was not the worst thing in the world, I figured this type of shakeup might be an opportunity for me to get back to the East Coast. Again, not a lot of it's because I need to be near Jared. I need to be near myself, but also my sister has two children. My brother just got married. And as much as I love California, and I truly do love the weather and the lifestyle out here, it's not a long-term solution. You know, my parents are getting older. There will be a point when, you know, they will resist heavily getting help. And it's going to be all hands on deck at that point, just forcing medication into their mouths. But I wanted to be closer to the family. So because I was being moved out, there is a friend of mine from college that I reconnected with a few months ago. I've been helping her develop a product for the past couple of months. And I was going to market it from my perspective in my company, but because I was being moved out of that department, she made an offer about coming in as a partner and kind of starting a new company that represents this product. And so I will be starting with that company and moving to New York. So that's a...
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's what part of New York?
I'm moving to Watertown, New York, which... apparently, you can see Canada from the front porch of, Sarah Palin can see Russia from her house. I will be able to see Canada from the front porch of where I am. But
so you can still be Jared Western, just Jared Western, New York.
I mean, I think it's going to have to be Jared North Stern and Jared South Stern, which doesn't make any sense at all.
No, not
which is
not
why
even close.
I like it. No, what's really great about it is, and you'll enjoy this as well, because I'll essentially be a partner within the company, I will have the freedom to travel and work from wherever I would like.
Fantastic.
So I can make some trips down. We can do some annual or quarterly, I'm talking too much in business terms, in-person episodes of Between Two Sterns. We can finally get the Between Two Sterns live going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, first we have to get a Between Two Sterns audience going.
Yeah, I'm moving from sunny, beautiful Southern California to a place where I feel like it's Winterfell. Because I've been working with this girl since like June of last year. And the entire time I've been professionally working with her, it's been winter up there. It's winter all the time. It just snowed yesterday again.
Well, it's cold here. It's cold in DC.
I'm never going to survive this, Jared. I'm never going to survive. I'm never going to survive it.
Yeah, you will. You'll be fine. You just need to layer more.
Okay.
But think about it this way. Your pale expression, your pale visage will blend in perfectly there where the sun don't shine.
Are you saying that finally I will have an appealing complexion to women? Like I won't be so jarring of a contrast to other people?
Right, exactly. Sure. You chose to move there.
This is a valid point.
This choice.
I want to work for myself. I'm tired of working for stupid people. Like not even stupid people. It's just, there are a lot of decisions that might not make sense in a company unless you're in the room, to quote Hamilton, the room where it happens, like the room where the decision is being made. And I got to tell you, even though this is certainly not the most money I've ever made in my life, working for myself is a very satisfying thing. There's something very satisfying about being in the room, making the decisions. There's a strong sense of, I don't know, I've always worked for other people. And I've never felt invested, but there's a strong investment in working for yourself. And what will
Because if you fail, then you go down with the ship.
We will bring Val on the podcast to promote the product. Val's the partner of mine, not just because to promote the podcast, but because she has a deep following of followers. So hopefully just bringing her on the podcast might get people to actually fucking listen to us.
Oh, I had a good couple of shows.
Jared, I feel like you've been really dominating this episode of the podcast, and I just like an opportunity to maybe share something of mine. So,
I think, there are certain shows where you drive the bus, and there are certain shows where I drive the bus.
Yeah, now, arguably, I've been taking a back seat for a couple of weeks now, months. I haven't had anything going on, man. Like, you know, like, you've been driving the bus for weeks now. You really have.
Yeah. Right,
so what happened with your shows? Go ahead.
Well, I was in, I had two shows in various far-flung reaches of Virginia. I was in a place called Luray, Virginia, which we spoke about, but I edited it out of the last show. It was called Performing Arts Luray. And
okay.
Like it was a performing arts space. They have plays and other things there. But when I was going, I was expecting like a small theater.
Mm-hmm.
And the venue was a bank that went out of business and then they just put a stage in it.
Dude, that's so fucking funny. I went to college at university there. I technically started at Kutztown University and then I went to the University of the Arts Theater Conservatory in Philadelphia. But because it was in the heart of Philadelphia, we just rented buildings because we didn't have, like, it's not like it was a campus. It was just like, oh, we can buy this building and this building. So it was really integrated into the city. I took acting class at an old bank went out of business that they bought and converted into a teaching space. Yeah.
So this was, very small town. The fact that the street was called, it was on Main Street, but that was pretty much just in name only. But great crowd, good time, people laughed in all the right places. And yeah, I'll tell you what though, the show I had on Saturday night in Stafford, Virginia.
Okay.
Another small little venue. It was like a coffee shop that was like, it wasn't even like part of like a restaurant complex or like a shopping complex.
Okay.
It was standalone and it was like right at the edge of a neighborhood. And the coffee shop was underneath, was in the first floor of the building where the HOA was. Okay. Yeah. It was just weird. Like when I pulled up to it, I'm like, am I in the right spot? Cause it doesn't look, basically across the street was condos and then down the street were more condos. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this is the spot because this is where the GPS said to go.
I feel like we're creating our own like Jeff Foxworthy bit at this point, where it's like, if you haven't performed stand-up comedy in a shady coffee shop, you haven't been a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, listen.
If you haven't had somebody rush the stage wanting to beat the shit out of you, you're not a stand-up comedian. Like, I feel like these are industry standards that need to be hit.
I've been doing this for 20 years, and I have played many exotic ports of call. Exotic can be used in several different ways.
Sure.
Mostly sarcastically. So this was one of those shows, but I have a point to make about this.
Go for
and
it.
When you've been doing comedy for as long as I have, and even if you haven't, even if you've only been doing it for, 6 months, a year, whatever, you're doing more and more gigs, things pile up. And while you may find yourself performing many, many different times, most of the audiences that come to see you have not seen comedy that many times. Nay, some of them at all. So while, sure, it's a gig in a coffee shop, but there were people who came up to me and the other comic I was working with after the show. Apparently this is a coffee shop was near a military base. And there was a table full of military spouses who were had like a girls' night out. And I guess their husbands were on deployment. So they were going through some stuff. And there was another young lady who was, this was her last night before she had to move to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple of sailors talked to us after the show, and they had a really good time.
Yeah.
And they really appreciated having a really good time. And when I had that show in Luray, and some guy came up to us after the show and said, this is the first time I forced myself to go out for the first time in like a year. I've been too depressed to do anything. And this was a laugh that I needed. And I mean, listen, I posted something about this on Facebook.
I know you did. And that's what I was going to say. I read this and I got a little, it hit me a little bit in the feels. And I'll tell you why after you finish telling people this. Cause like,
yeah, because you can't underestimate what kind of good time people are having while watching you.
Yeah.
Because a lot of shit's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been well documented that over the last 2 years,
I think so as well.
People have been going through a lot. And so as comedians, we're making people laugh. That the laugh that they get from me could be something to help, vent off the stress that they've piled up over the week or over the month or over the year. I mean, you just don't know what people are going through. And I know people piss, oh, laughter's the best medicine and comedians are healers. No, fuck that shit. We're not changing lives every night.
Right.
With our stupid jokes. But every once in a while, there will be one person in an audience that specifically resonates with what you're doing. And it's just something you got to be aware of, because it may just seem like another gig to you. But for the audiences that come out to see you, they may never see stand-up comedy. They may never have seen stand-up comedy before in their lives. You may be the first comic they've ever seen.
You made a comment in your post, and I'm probably paraphrasing a little bit, but it really resonated with something that I was taught very early on, because I grew up in theater. We talked about this early on in the podcast.
Sure.
And I took my theater training into stand-up comedy, which is why I've never really meshed well with stand-up comedians, if I'm being honest with you. Like, I get along with them, but my process when I do stand-up comedy is so different than anybody else's. I rarely, if ever, drink before I get up on stage. I always sit in the back of the audience and I watch that audience and I study that audience. I listen to what they're reacting to, what the vibe is, what the feel is. And forgive me, I don't have the post that you put up in front of me, I think I'm paraphrasing some aspect of it, which is, even though you may have told this joke 100 times,
right?
It's still the first time that person in the audience is hearing it. And that was something that was instilled in me very early on in theater. Cause like, you rehearse for 6 weeks, you do a show for 3 months, 5 months. And by the time you're towards the end, you're just so sick of saying the lines, but you have to remember that even though this might be the 100th time you've said the line, it's the first time that person in the audience is hearing it. And more importantly than that, the responsibility of a performer this person has paid money out of their pocket to watch you. This is not you just having a good time. This is not just you throwing back a couple of shots, doing some lines in the bathroom and getting up there. You are exchanging goods for services. This person is paying money to see you perform. You owe that individual, you owe the audience of five people the same performance that you owe the audience of 500.
That's true.
You do. Because both are paying the same amount and both are there equally invested in that experience. And I've never really meshed heavily with comedians because, as you know, in the comedic world, a lot of networking is pre-show drinking and like mid-show drinking and that kind of like, that kind of like, let's get fucked up before we get up there. And I never could do it. I felt too bad. I was like, it was always amazing because you and I have talked about how little I've performed in comparison to you. Every opportunity I get to walk up on that stage and grab that mic, I cherish completely. And every audience, I believe, deserves the same right to have the same performance. And when you posted that, I was like, God damn it. That is a great similarity that I have with this Jared Stern. We often joke about like the little ones and what chocolate bar we all have in common. Like that.
By the way, whatchamacallit. That's one of my.
Who's a Mutsit? No, I'm just being an ass. But you posting that really resonated with me. And it's interesting because that's on my notes to bring up in this as well. So when you said it, that's why I started smiling so much because I was like, that hit me. That really and I'm trying to be on Facebook more to see when you post stuff. So we actually.
I noticed that you liked it.
I did like it. Yeah. Unlike the Haggis post that I pulled out of nowhere, which was magical and still amazing. I'm going to post that video this week.
That just struck me over the weekend. And I had a chance to get together with some guys that were regulars at the open mic that I started out at. Mm. The club is no longer. It has been no longer for quite some time. But I got to, all these guys. I think I'm the last one left that's still performing.
Interesting.
Granted, these guys are significantly older than me, but yeah, it's, we sat around and shot the shit. And, it's funny because I brought up the sentiment that we just shared. And one of the other guys is like, I think there's a stat that says for every audience, there is one person in the audience for whom that is the last stand-up comedy show they'll ever see. So
that reminds me of a stat that I've thought about and I've heard, which is, and for those of you listening who are in relationships, please understand that there is going to be a moment where you have sexual intercourse with your partner for the last time ever. And neither of you will know that that is the last time. It's just
treat every time like it's your last. There you go.
Every single time like it's your last. I remember you posting that and I was like, God damn it, that's good. Yeah, I was really happy you posted that.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you how appreciative one of the guys at the show on Saturday was, because we were selling merch after the show. Had the other comic had t-shirts. I was selling my CDs, even though people don't have CD players anymore.
Hey, why aren't you selling QR codes to download your?
Because the show in Luray, they were very excited that they had on the programs QR codes to buy tickets for the next show. And they were like, have you heard of QR codes? And so I was like, well, if you're just discovering QR codes, some of you might still have CD players.
Before you move on, I do need to ask this. Do you plug the podcast at your shows?
Sometimes I do.
Because I don't have an audience to plug our podcast to. And by the way, just so I can put my money where my mouth is, I plugged our podcast at my brother's wedding during my best man speech. And like, not a little bit of the speech, but like enough of the speech that like it was overstaying its welcome. So.
Well, during my set, if it's a longer set and I did a half an hour in both spots, I do a bit where I talk about when I'm selling my merch, And so it's like, well, if you want to find out more about me, you can go to jaredstern.com. I've got this, and I've got a podcast. And then I tell people about the podcast. And then I tell people to please buy a CD because gas is expensive.
Yes.
But there was a guy after the show in Stafford. And I'm selling some CDs, and I actually sold two or three of them.
Oh, nice.
And he asked me, do you have a Venmo? And I said, yeah. Can I interest you in a CD? He's like, no. And what's your Venmo? And I said, I gave it to him. And I looked at my phone, and he tipped me $50. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I've only received tips like two or three times in my career, but I was like, fuck yeah. All right. Thank you, sir.
There were two distinct paths to that story. One was that he was going to tip you without buying a CD. And one was that he stole your identity and you're warning me that I need to change my social security number because now he has a network of all Jared Sterns.
Well, I mean, I don't think Venmo is quite that.
We've never talked about this. Other similarities in mind. What is your social security number?
Oh, we haven't talked about this. It's 123.
175.
What are you talking about?
Is it really 123?
No, it's not 123.
You know, I always knew you were the dishonest one. I'm CD. I'll give my baseball joke. How about that?
Oh, yeah. What's your baseball joke?
So I've realized that baseball is the stupidest sport of all of them. And here's the reason why. Baseball feels like a guy who's playing rock, paper, scissors and keeps losing and keeps trying to do double or nothing. It's like the sport of baseball, it's not two halves. It's not three quarters. It's like, all right, let's have an inning and you lost. And it's like best out of three. And they're like, okay, well, three, you're still down. Best out of five. Five, you're still down. Best out of seven. Seven, you're still down. Best out of nine. It's like nine is the limit. If you can't put any points on the board by nine, we're ending the game unless it's a tie. And then the game never fucking ends ever.
Okay.
It needs work. We should end on the other thing. Hey, everybody. Thanks for sticking your ears between two Sterns.
Please leave us a 5-star review, even if it's a sarcastic one.
Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Have an idea for the show, or are you also Jared Stern?
Shoot us an email. You can find links to everything at jaredstern.com.